Accession number 9168, rule number 28.
Mr. Amat, rule 28.
After this, the unit shifted to another tented camp in a wood. I forget the name of the place. It wasn't very far away from where we were. And here, for some unknown reason, I expect the OC had looked through my record, and I got special VIP treatment. I was given a tent all on my own, and the Sergeant Major came up to me and said that I was to be excused all duties and more or less do as I liked until my demobilisation papers came through. And the Army, all the services had got this wonderful organisation of getting rid of people who'd been in the service, get them back to civilian life. And everybody had a number, category number, according to the age they were and the length of service they'd done with any of the three services. And by that, they arrived at a figure whereby the oldest and the one with the longest service came out first. Well, being as I was one of the oldest who were serving and had a lengthy service, I came out amongst the top. I think my category was number 4 or 5, something like that. And each one of these categories was called up at fortnightly interviews, and all the men in that category, all the people, not necessarily men, maybe women and all, were all transported to various depots which were set up all over the country, where they were documented and passed on through clearance stages to final demob centres. Well, I spent 6 or 7 weeks in this camp, and the weather was pretty good, so I had quite a relaxing period. But eventually I was called to the orderly room and told I was to be demobbed, given some papers and a warrant, and I had to report to a depot at Sittingbourne. Here I spent the night and went through various stages of documentation and medical exams and all the rest of it, and then I was posted on to the final demob centre at Taunton. When we got there, it was a similar procedure to the one we used to have in France in the First World War when we were taken through to be deloused. You went in one door as a soldier and you came out the other door as a civilian, and you passed through various stages. And first of all, you picked up underclothes and boots and socks and shirts and ties and suits and overcoats and hats, until eventually you arrived. You could either change or keep your uniform on, and they issued you with large bags that you carried the stuff away in. One thing about it I'd like to mention, the fact that when we got outside the it was a church hall they'd used at this particular place to do the demob business. Now, when we got outside, there was all these London touts, sort of wide boys who used to operate during the war on the black market, and they came up to you and they'd offer you so much money for your suit or for your overcoat or whatever it was. And being as the clothing restrictions were still on at that time, of course they were on a good thing, but I don't remember anybody getting rid of their stuff, but I expect there's a lot of them did. Anyway, I caught the train and got back to the Yeovil and my family late in the afternoon, and I was once more back as a civilian. After a few days, I got a letter from the War Office to say that my old job as a clerk with the Ordnance at Woolwich, I couldn't really go there, but I was offered the job of a clerk in the Ordnance Depot at Sherborne, which is about 6 miles away from Yeovil. And I went there and reported, and they put me in the pay office doing the civilian accounts. And I was there for a couple of years, I suppose. During the, I remember the winter was 47. It's quite a journey from Yeovil to Sherborne, very hilly, and there was a big freeze up at that time in January, February, March 47, and quite a lot of snow, and it's quite a job getting backwards and forwards from Yeovil to Sherborne. But anyway, eventually the depot was closed, as all these depots were closing down after the war effort and getting back to civilian life. And I was one of several who were made redundant, so I was out, more or less out of work for a little while. Only, I think it was only about a week or a fortnight, not many days anyway. And then people from the Ministry of Labour directed me to a unit in Ounsford Camp, the Royal Engineers, who had an office there and had a vacancy for a clerk, and so I managed to get a job there. And whilst I was there, I met another London chap who was come down from London, and he had a little shop in Taunton. He used to go backwards and forwards on his little motorbike, and we struck up quite a good friendship. And whilst I was there, I undertook an exam for promotion to a clerical officer, and I think I went to Taunton for this. Eventually I got made clerical officer and made an established civil servant, and that meant that I hadn't to pay any more insurance for unemployment or sickness, so that was a good thing anyway. But whilst I was there, I was rather concerned about the fact that I'd already been away from my wife and family for 6 years, and I still had to go to Weymouth every Monday and stop there until Friday or Saturday and then come back home for a week then. So I looked around and in the various papers that used to come through and orders and all that through the army, and I found that there may be a chance of a vacancy in my local camp, Hounsford Camp, where I'd been before. And so I applied through the command secretary and got given permission to attend Hounsford Camp, and I got a job as a chief clerk of the LAD Remy. LAD, by the way, is Light Aid Detachment. And I was there for several years, until then it was disclosed that I was only really attached because my unit was based at Southampton, so I became more or less spare. So the main unit, the Transport Corps, took me on as a clerk, and I finished up the rest of my civil service in the medical centre. Here I met a colonel, an ex-colonel, Indian colonel, who we struck up quite a friendship, really, because he'd been out to Africa and had served during the war, and he was seconded from the Indian Army, and he was a medical officer. And instead of him being my more or less boss, we used to sit there and chat about old times, and he must have thought quite a lot of me, because any function that was going, he always used to include me, and I used to go to various functions in the officer's mess. And I'm afraid I lost touch with him later, but I heard he'd gone to a unit in Wales, and all this is long while ago. I don't know what's happened to him now. But eventually I finished up, I got an extended service with the civil service, and I worked until I was 69, and then I was retired as a clerical officer with a pension. And since then I've been on pension and more or less left to my own devices now.
Could you tell me a little about the disability pension you got from the
Army? Yes. This, soon after I was demobbed, I got a letter from the Ministry of Pensions, and they stated that my case had been reviewed, and I was awarded 20% disability pension, which in those days was, I think I used to get 14 shillings a week. They sent me a book, which I used to take the post office and cash every week and get 14 shillings. Well, this kept on for some time, and I used to have to go up every 2 years for examination, medical examination. And in those exams, they decide whether you've got to continue or your pension's got to be increased or decreased or whatever. But I remember I went once or twice, but I didn't keep up my visits to the doctor when I didn't feel too grand. And I soldiered on and went back to work. And I think the last 2 years of my pension, I never had any sickness at all. The only time I was away from the job was during my special annual leave. Well, this stood me in no good stead, because the last time I went, 1960, in front of the board, the medical officers there told me that I hadn't been reporting sick, and that they got no knowledge of me suffering at all from my disability, and they decided that they didn't think I was entitled to any more disability pension. But when I got back, I received a letter to say that this had been confirmed, and I was awarded 2 years pension as a gratuity, which didn't amount to much, because as I say, it was only 14 shillings a week. But that was the end of my pension career.
What was the disability anyway?
Well, it was dermatitis and fibrositis, caused through war service. You're standing in the field looking up at the sky and in all sorts of weathers, and more or less that was what caused the illness, the actual weather, staying up to weather all the time, you see.
Can you remember VE Day, when the war ended?
Yeah, well, the war in Europe, that was VE Day. VJ Day was the day that the whole war ended. That was when Japan was overwhelmed. But the VE Day, what happened was all communities, everybody in the whole country, as far as I can remember, through the papers and what I did, they organised street parties. And I remember our environment round here, there was quite a lot of people who'd been evacuated from London and the various big cities, and there's quite a number of children. The women and, well, the men and all got together and organised these street parties. And one of the things they'd done here was they had a sort of a football rugby match with all the men and women dressed up in all sorts of costumes over the recreation ground. And then they had tables erected and all sorts of things that could be spared, because remember, in those days, rationing was still in effect and was to go on for some time after that. There was only a certain amount of sugar and all that sort of thing. But anyway, the women got together and made cakes and tarts, and some of the men got together and bought crates of beer, and everything was all organised, and people decorated their houses with the, like they used to in the old days at Christmas, with their paper chains and all that sort of thing. It's quite a good, but I think the weather turned, if I remember rightly. The day was all right for a start, but it turned and started to rain, I think, afterwards. This must have been in a month after the war, somewhere about June, I think it was, middle of June, before these street parties were organised.
How did you feel about the end of the war?
Oh, overjoyed, because whenever I used to come home on leave, and being as we were in a vulnerable area, we had aerodromes all round us, Yeovilton and Westlands, and the Germans used to pay quite a bit of attention to this area, I remember when I was home on leave, nearly every time there was air raid warnings and we could hear German planes passing overhead, perhaps towards Bristol. This time when I was home, there was nothing like that, and it was quite something to know that you got through all that and there was going to be no more of this, these German planes coming over.
Did you stay in the Territorials after the war?
No, I never stayed in the Territorials after the war, but I joined the Territorials before the war, and 1938, and being as I was in the Territorials before the war and served during the war in Territorial units, all your war service, especially active service, counted as double. So that by the time I'd finished my time in June 1945, I completed about 13.5 years. I was awarded a Territorial Efficiency Medal.
How do you feel now about your long career with the Army?
Oh, really rather chuffed about it, because I feel that I haven't wasted my life. I've had some quite amusing and harrowing, in some cases, experiences, which has always stood me in good stead in any crisis that cropped up during my civilian life. And, well, I'm rather thankful that I'm still in good health and able to recount these adventures and reminiscences.
Thank you very much.